You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jess from The Fioneers.
I'm Heidi Dusick, and this is the Earn and Invest Podcast.
Two different life stories. My father, who died when I was 7 years old, always had a premonition that he was going to die young. So whether consciously or not, he wasn't overly concerned with saving for his own retirement. For him, rightly so, the idea that you only live once, or YOLO, must have been front and center. So he didn't worry much about money. He had hobbies and passions and bucket lists, and he spent on them. He died unexpectedly at the age of 40. I, on the other hand, have always felt that longevity was in my cards. So for me, I passed on YOLO in order to defer gratification and build up a huge retirement or financial independence fund. I have always felt that there will be more time. It's money that I worry about running out of. It's a catch-22. Time versus money, YOLO versus deferred gratification, spend now or save for retirement. Is there any way to capture the best of both worlds? My guests today answer this question with a resounding yes. The simple solution? Something they call SLOFI. Are you looking to elevate your asset allocation? Guard your portfolio against volatility? Equity Multiple can help. Invest in professionally managed commercial real estate starting with just $5,000. Establish passive income streams while experienced asset managers go to work on your behalf. Sign up at equitymultiple.com/earn and receive an enhanced return on your first investment. Again, that's equitymultiple.com/earn. Jessica Lynn is the creator and writer of the popular blog, The Fioneers. She embraces the motto that the journey should be as remarkable as the destination and coined the term SLOFI to describe her approach to financial independence. Heidi Dusick is the founder and host of the Ordinary Sherpa podcast. She describes herself as a catalyst, innovator, and an unshakable optimist. Her forthcoming book is titled Beyond Normal, a field guide to embrace adventure, explore the wilderness, and design an extraordinary life with kids. Jessica and Heidi, welcome to Earn and Invest. Jessica, let me start with you. Is YOLO, you only live once, a bad thing?
I don't actually think that YOLO is a bad thing. I think we have different approaches to what we think YOLO actually means. So actually, when I originally coined the SLOFI term, I actually thought of it as the real YOLO. Like the thing that allows you to live your one best life. And I'll back up for a second and talk about what slow financial independence actually means to me. So the idea behind SLOFI is similar to slow living or slow food, right? It's the focus on intentionality. And for slow financial independence, we're focused on intentionally making decisions to use the financial freedom that we gain along the way to financial independence to design lives that we truly love along the way. And saving and investing allows us to live that best life, right? So for example, it gave me an opportunity to take a 6-month career break to deal with a mental health issue. It allowed me to work part-time for, 3 days a week and not need to worry about my long-term financial future, right? It's allowed me to build up a business that I absolutely love, that I only do things I want to do, right? And it's allowed me to quit my job to take that full time, even when it wasn't necessarily covering all of my expenses yet, because I knew that I had built this cushion already and I was using my financial freedom to design my life along the way to FI. I didn't need to wait until after I reached a specific milestone, because I only live once and I want to live my best life along the way.
Heidi, it's interesting because for those of us in personal finance, when we think of YOLO, we think of it as a bad thing. Like, you only live once. We worry about losing the chance at taking that money that we spend, quote unquote, frivolously, and using it to invest and compound and make more money in the future. But if you look at the rest of the world, they think of YOLO as a good thing. Like, carpe diem, seize the day. It really begs the question, who's right? Let me quote Jessica here from one of her blog posts. She said, because of CoastFi and SlowFi, I actually fit into the FIRE movement. No, we're talking about financial independence, retire early. Heidi, when you first came upon the financial independence movement, did you feel like you fit in, like this was something for you?
Yes and no. So I, unlike you, Jordan, I am the person who ate the marshmallow every single time, right? I did not have delayed gratification. I was all about like doing the thing that brought me the greatest joy in the moment. I wanted to be very present in my life. And so this idea that I couldn't necessarily have what would be my ideal life potentially for years to come was a little bit painful at first. However, in the process, I understood the value of freedom in my life, time freedom, location freedom, the ability to really design my ideal life as opposed to like just getting by to get to that ideal life. And so for me, I kind of joke that the metric was less about money and time and more about joy. Like, how am I going to experience joy today? And it became less about the big things, maybe the YOLO defined things, and more about what are the simple things I can do to have, you know, these meaningful moments with my kids. I have three kids. So again, I didn't always fit in the stereotypical FIRE population because I just felt like I had more things anchoring me in my life. And I say anchors is like really positive things. These are things that I felt really truly and strongly about. So for me, it was like this mix of finding my space. And ultimately, yes, I do feel like the FIRE and financially independent population and audience are my people, but it took me a while to find my little niche in that space.
Jessica, likewise, did you feel the financial independence retire early movement wasn't quite for you when you first encountered it?
Definitely. So when I first learned about financial independence, I thought that it was all about deprivation, right? Like, I read blogs and books and listened to podcasts, and it all seemed like the white tech bro who was spending less than $20,000 a year and making six figures and was reaching FI in 5 years or something, right? And those were the stories that were prominent in the media. Those were the most popular blogs at the time. And that was part of the reason why we decided to start the FIRE in the first place, was because we felt like there was something missing from the message. And so, yeah, I definitely felt like I didn't fit, but I wanted to forge a place where I did and where I knew other people would also identify that might not fit within the FIRE movement at the time.
Heidi, let's talk about traditional work. I mean, you did the 9-to-5 thing. You were a teacher. Talk about getting involved in the financial independence movement and specifically the SlowFi movement, and how did it affect your feelings about traditional work?
Yeah, it's interesting. As I've entered into the entrepreneurial space, there's definitely this bias towards anti-W-2 work, so to speak, of, you know, that you need to leave your W-2 job to be a successful entrepreneur or to really be FIRE. And so I have lived a life where I've always felt like work was just simply a slice of my life. It's never like, I don't love the concept of like work-life balance. I'm like, no, work is just a small portion of my life. But along the way, I've always just found work that I enjoy. And if I didn't enjoy it, I left it. And so I am in a position right now that I actually love. And so for me, it has been less about leaving work or leaving traditional employment, but rather define what I want that work slice of my life to look like. And am I actually thriving in that space? So I have a lot of conversations with my current employer, and I still like the job. I don't have a desire to leave work. I may take extended breaks from work or explore ways that I can have more flexibility at work. But I, to this point, don't feel this urge to quote unquote retire from my job early to enjoy life.
I definitely don't think that for everyone, they need to leave traditional employment to be able to design a life that they truly love, right? For me, that is what made sense. As someone who has some mental health challenges, working in a traditional, stressful 9-to-5, 40 hours a week wasn't going to work for me. And it was really helpful to realize that so that I could make the changes to sort of reduce the stressors that were causing the mental health challenges in the first place. But I think for many people, there's so many options for flexible W-2 work that allows them to live a life that they would truly love, right? So there's people who might be finding a fully remote job that would allow them to be a digital nomad, right? So I have one client right now who that's what she's doing, is focusing on having a fully remote job that will allow her to travel to different places for months at a time while she's continuing to work, right? Or there's ways to reduce your hours, work 32 hours a week or even less than that to have the flexibility that you need, or to negotiate sabbaticals or significant time off from a current employer. I think sometimes people expect that those things are not possible, when the reality is in many places that it would be quite possible to do those things.
And I think to Jess's point, you know, there are things that I've always aspired to in life, but it didn't seem responsible. And so I'll just actually use this example. My husband has been a teacher for almost 20 years, and he felt it was irresponsible to leave his job because that's what adults are supposed, quote unquote, right, supposed to do. And so when we started designing our life, I said, well, what would be fun? Like, what would bring you the most joy? What would be something that feels, you know, edgy, feels maybe a little uncomfortable? I like to call it like discomfortable. You don't have to like jump off the edge or anything, but like, what's the margin of comfort for you? And he's like, gosh, it would be so fun to be a ski bum. And I was like, oh, we could do like fun employment, or what I've heard lately is financial independence, recreational employment. So you do these side gigs. So there's still some employment potentially, maybe seasonal work, but you get to decide like what's the thing you want to do, and you don't have to commit to it long-term. But it's giving you an option to play in a space that you never felt was a possibility before.
So, Jessica, I feel like we need some definitions here. You gave us a more full account of what SloFi is, but can we narrow it down to a single sentence or idea? And specifically, what's the difference between SloFi and CoSFi?
So, SloFi is a philosophy focused on designing a great life while you are building financial freedom and using that financial freedom. CoSFi is a specific number, right? So it's a specific milestone on your path to financial freedom. And that is the point at your age where you no longer need to save or invest another dollar to have a comfortable traditional retirement. So based on your age, you've invested enough that it will grow if you don't touch it between now and the age that you want to traditionally retire. And so this means once you reach that number or that financial milestone, you can actually scale back work and only cover your actual costs of living if you want, because you know your traditional retirement is taken care of.
So Heidi, as Jess is saying, SloFi is intentionally slowing down your path to financial independence now. Although it may take longer to reach retirement in the end, you're going to enjoy the pathway much more. Tell me the difference between this and a mini retirement, because in a lot of ways I get confused about how SloFi differs itself from mini retirements.
Yeah, I think a mini retirement or a gap year or sabbatical, I think that's part of the options in the slow-fi space. So if you are creating an intentional life and you realize you need a break, you can test that by doing a mini retirement or by doing what I'm calling a gap year. There are options in different language that we put behind it. But the pieces that helped me get there, and Jess may have a different perspective on this, but the piece that helped me get there was having my finances in order. So I had the confidence and I wasn't stressed about taking this space, you know, creating this space in my life to offer that opportunity to experiment. How do I fill my time when I don't have employment filling in that space? For me, those mini retirements are great intentional experiences or experiments to test what do I want my life to look like, and then not relying on work per se to fill in that space for you.
Jessica, as I was talking about in my introduction, the real risk of financial independence retire early is, like my father, you die young and never get to enjoy the fruits of your labor. I'm going to ask you the same question of SlowFi. What is the major risk of SlowFi?
Good question. So I think that the risk of SlowFi is that you aren't, right? I think SlowFi is when you're figuring out the correct balance for you on that path. And the risk is getting that wrong, right? So for example, I think of someone like Tanya Hester, who knew that she had a medical condition that could potentially keep her from being able to work after the age of 40. If she were to say, well, I'm just going to do SlowFi, and like, who cares, right, about that, you know, particular thing, that may not have been the right choice, right? Like for her, retiring early seems like it was the most intentional choice for her. Although there are certain things that I've talked with her since then where she said, I wish I had just taken the trip, you know, and done certain things right along the path. So I think there's certain risks to saying, like, I'm going to not sprint toward financial independence, because there are things that could potentially happen in our lives that, you know, fully disable us, or, you know, a cancer diagnosis or something like really extreme. But I think the idea is that we want to figure out the right balance for ourselves along this path. So for example, I know and have seen a lot of the research that people over the age of like 50 or 55 are often pushed out of careers before they're ready to retire. And so I think this is less valid for me now since I'm self-employed. But had I wanted to stay in a traditional career, I think I would have wanted to be able to be coast-fi for a retirement age of 55, just to have a hedge against that particular challenge. So I think it's important for people to take into account their own life circumstances to figure out what the unique right path is for them.
Tanya Hester, of course, is the author of Work Optional and the blogger behind Our Next Life. Heidi, so far we've been really talking theoretical. Let's talk specifics. How has SlowFi played out in your lifestyle and your career?
We are a family of five. So it's interesting that we've had a lot of conversations around, does this fit? How can we do this? I see the window. So my kids are 12, 10, and 6 at this point. And for a long time, I thought I wanted to travel the world, to do all of these things. And it just felt like I had to wait until retirement to do those things. And so for me, actually, SlowFi has given me permission to do those things now. My kids are at an opportunity where I decided, you know, we have this window where things are going to be harder when they're in high school. So we're taking this window of opportunity of like our kids are still, you know, under middle school or less to say, let's start doing these things now, as opposed to me waiting until we're retired to do those things. Things like potentially living in an RV for the summer, or things like being slow mads for a little while. You know, all of those are really exciting. And my son was just, we say yes to a lot more things, I think, from this intentionality of SlowFi. Like, let's give it a try. You don't have to decide to do these things or not. You know, I like a little taste test, right? Let's just take a no thank you try. Let's take a little taste test, see if we like it. We don't have to commit to this long term, But if we love it and this fits us, then we can explore it further. And I felt like if I would have gone down the full FI path, I was really making those decisions without testing them or creating an entire portfolio around what I thought joy was going to look like for our family. And it wasn't really taste tested. So we didn't really do the experimentation. We have an experience where my son just tried out for the luge team. Like, I probably would not sign up for this, right? But it was like one of those awkward moments where I was like, sure, go ahead. And then he qualified. So we'll see what happens next, right? I probably wouldn't have said that, yes, because now that means travel for us that feels like it takes away from family time. So there's things that have given us permission to say, okay, well, let's just try it and see how it goes. I also, though, have had circumstances that probably were not ideal that have really tested us to say, oh, this is something we didn't think about. So just to go into a little bit deeper detail, we were on an RV trip over Christmas, went to Texas. We were mountain biking, which we love to do. And my daughter had an accident in Texas. I'm from Wisconsin, which required emergency surgery. And so over 2 calendar years. So talk about understanding what the medical expenses would look like when you're traveling around the country in an RV or potentially out of your area of service or out of network. What did I need to know? And given the fact that I had done some of this research already, I actually felt quite skilled to negotiate with the service providers and ask good questions that I don't know that I would have done if I wasn't FI or exploring slow FI in this concept. Because I just, like I said, I just wouldn't have known to ask those questions.
Jessica, Heidi was just talking about how she now has the courage to say yes to things that she normally wouldn't have before she discovered slow FI. Let's turn that around a little bit. What kind of things have you decided to say no to, especially career-wise, because of the slow FI lifestyle?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think ultimately, in order to say yes to the things that we want to, we need to say no to a lot of things that we don't want. And so for me, slow FI has enabled me to be able to opt out of a toxic job and to be able to say no to working a full-time 40-hour-a-week job. And when I was working part-time, to say, you know, this isn't going to fit into my 3-day work week. And if you want me to do this, I can't do this. Right. And setting those really clear boundaries around the things that I don't really want in my life. Right. And now as a business owner, there's a lot of thought that goes into it because now, like, I don't want to be a business owner if I have to work crazy hours, right? People are like, entrepreneurship is hard and you need to work 50, 60 hours. So why quit your regular job to do that? I don't necessarily think that that's the case all of the time. I think it's important to prioritize. And now the boundaries that I'm setting are with myself, right? To say, I'm not going to take on all of this, you know, extra work with the shiny object syndrome and, you know, all of the things. I'm going to figure out what the absolute most important things are for me to do. And I'm going to do those things so that I can design a business that enables me to live the life that I want and do that in 25 hours of work a week. And so there's some definite boundaries, you know, with others, and but also most importantly, I think boundaries with myself.
Heidi, I want to talk about compound interest, but I want to do it in a sort of roundabout way. My wife and I were watching YouTube videos the other day, and we found one that looked very much slow FI, and it was about this person who in their 20s became financially independent by buying 2 properties in their mid-20s, spending 2 years fixing them up, and then selling them for a huge profit. And that allowed them to retire early. But the point this person was making is that if they could do it again, it was 2 years of really tough work and maybe they would have done it differently. Now, maybe I'm old, right? I'm 48 years old and I went through medical school, but I mean, aren't we supposed to work really hard in our 20s, especially when we have all that time ahead of us so that we can make a lot of money, put it in the stock market and allow it to compound? Is there anything wrong, per se, with hard work at the beginning of your career, even if you don't love it at first?
I think it's a good question, and I think it's one you have to decide for yourself. I don't know that there's always the exact answer of what you should do. I don't like to shit on people, just to be clear. I have felt that my 20s, I enjoyed it, but I also worked hard. And I don't regret that because it gave me a little bit of space to pay off debt and to figure out what I didn't and did not want in life. So I do think it's up to you to decide. You know, Jordan, I would never say, oh, you shouldn't have gone to college. Like, that was a really bad decision for you. I don't think that's my place to answer that question. But I also think I find that the peaks of my joy are more rich and more meaningful because I did struggle, that it gives relevance to that. You know, if I was just continuing to thrive and life was easy, I don't know that I would really appreciate what I have. I've established that our family budget is $75,000 a year with three kids. Like, that's just where we fit. Now, I make more than that. We make much more than that as a family, and we could spend more, but we've just chosen, like, it's sometimes good to have a little struggle in there because you get a little bit more creative. It's almost like, you know, I've got this tube of toothpaste, and when it's full, I just squirt it out my kids squirt it out all over the place. You know, we make a mess of it. We don't really use what we have effectively. But let me tell you, when that toothpaste is like down to the wire, we are like scrunching it and squeezing it and rolling it and cutting the ends off. Like, we're using everything we can because there's a little bit of a struggle in there. We get a little bit more creative with the resources that we have because we're a little, there's a constriction, there's barriers to making and using the full resources that we have. So I do think sometimes that struggle helps us get higher, or, you know, more joy out of the experience, gets us more creative and use different types of solution building processes.
Heidi, I love what you're saying there. And it sort of gets us out of this black and white thinking, right? Mm-hmm. So with the question of, in your 20s, should you enjoy your life or should you save, right? Like, that seems like a false dichotomy, right? Like, I think you're then finding along that spectrum, what is the right place for you, right? So for example, I would say there were many things that I enjoyed about my 20s, and I did not make a lot of money, right? So my first job out of college, I was a street canvasser in New York City for a charity. So I was literally like stopping people on the street and having them give me their credit cards to sign up for like a monthly donation, which was like the worst, but it was a recession job. And then I did AmeriCorps and made $11,000 a year for the first, you know, for the year. And then that sort of catapulted me into a job that then I made like $40,000, and I felt like I was rolling in the dough. Right. And there was, right. So it wasn't like I took a path where I did, like, I totally deprived myself, did something I totally, you know, did work that I totally hated just so that I could save a ton of money so I could be Coast Fi and then do what I wanted, right? I took the $11,000 job to work in the nonprofit. I then decided to continue working in nonprofit. We had gotten used to living on a total of $30,000 a year. And so when we started making more, it was like, oh, now we can go out to dinner every once in a while. And like, now we can rent a place that's a tiny bit more expensive with a dishwasher. But with that mentality and with that struggle, right, we still reached Coast Fi by the age of 31, 32, and got to that point. And, you know, it was interesting too during that time because I definitely wasn't into the finances at that point. And so I was like, I want to spend my money. I want to go do the thing. And my husband was like, you know, we're starting to make a little bit more money now, so we can do both. Like, we can save some of it and we can use some of it to actually go on vacation and to actually, you know, inflate our lifestyle in the ways that really mattered to us and that really brought joy into our lives. And so I do think it's possible to find a balance for yourself and still get to Coast Fi at a fairly young age.
And I do want to say, you know, having some understanding of your finances is really critical. So we learned about different rules of financial independence. My husband's a teacher, has access to a 457. So when we learned about that and the rules around a 457, it gave us a different mindset of like, let's go all in on a 457 for you, as opposed to his four. I'm sorry if I'm talking jargon here, but a 457 is a deferred compensation plan often available to public employees. And for the, just so people know, you can use those things for things like housing. And you should really talk with your financial advisor about this. Obviously, this is just, you know, not advice, or just know that this is an option and explore it. But when we learned the rules around 457, that gave us permission to say, well, let's optimize that as a potential to explore what life might be like if we decided to leave work before age 59 and a half. How could we use that tool in our toolbox? And so what we probably wouldn't have done had we not known that is we probably just would have done what everybody does and, you know, give the whatever percentage, the corporate match or the company share option of 3% or 4% to our 401ks or our 403bs. And we had a pension. So we put up, just leaned on the pension. But understanding the tools that are available through financial independence or through the financial space gave us more options and really helped us make more confident decisions, because we could then really think about different ways or different periods of our lifetime when we could utilize these tools. So under 59 and a half, we have different options than we do for traditional retirement. And I think understanding all of that, when you think about compound interest, is it's not always a black and white answer either in terms of what tools are available to you at what points in your life. There's a lot of different options. And so especially as we consider things like a gap year, that looks different than what age 65 is going to look like. And the tools we use to finance our life at that point are going to be very different. And our kids are going to be very different point. You know, I think there's a lot of different options. And I do go back to Jess's point that I don't think it's black and white, because there are so many variables in our life. At 20 is very different than 40. 40 is very different than 60. And so having some concepts around what do I want at these periods of my life actually does help you lean into the different tools that you can utilize.
We're talking to Jessica Lynn, who is the writer behind The Fioneers, and Heidi Dusick, who is the creator and producer of the Ordinary Sherpa podcast. We're going to take a short break. I'm Doc G, and this is the Earn and Invest podcast. You know what? I love our meals from Factor. My son started getting them about a year ago when he needed a quick alternative to meals on the go. But where we've really enjoyed them is we've been remodeling our kitchen. That's right, we've had no access to our kitchen for the last few weeks. And some nights we just had no idea what to do for a meal. That is where Factor came in. We would just pop the meal in the microwave and 2 minutes later, we'd have a fantastic meal. You can do the exact same thing, and there's tons of variety. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week. These are chef-prepared meals, and let me tell you, they are delicious. No fuss, no mess. You just put it in the microwave, and 2 minutes later, you have a meal. This is tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Head to factormeals.com/earn50 and use your code EARN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code EARN50 at factormeals.com/earn50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Over 30,000 investors across the U.S. are discovering a new way to build wealth. Equity Multiple brings you access to a diverse wealth generation ecosystem with cash-flowing real estate. Starting with just $5,000, you can allocate to professionally managed commercial real estate assets. Sign up in minutes, find investments that fit your strategy, and invest your desired amount through a streamlined, secured platform. Since 2015, Equity Multiple has delivered over $170 million in distributions to investors and 17.4% aggregate net return. Join the thousands of investors nationwide who are building stronger, more diversified portfolios through real estate investing. Sign up at equitymultiple.com/earn and receive an enhanced return on your first investments. All investments involve risk, and past performance is no guarantee of future results. Again, that is equitymultiple.com/earn. Let me reintroduce you. We are talking to Jessica Lynn. She embraces the motto that the journey should be as remarkable as the destination and coined the term SLOFI to describe her approach to financial independence. Heidi Dusick is the author of the forthcoming book, Beyond Normal, A Field Guide to Embrace Adventure, Explore the Wilderness, and Design an Extraordinary Life with Kids. Let's talk about SLOFI versus the traditional financial independence retire early movement. The traditional FIRE movement defines enough based on a net worth number, the safe withdrawal rate of 4% or the 25 times rule, the idea that you take what you spend in a year and multiply it by 25, and that's your financial independence number. That's what enough looks like for traditional FIRE. What does enough look like for the SLOFI movement?
Yeah, that's a great question. So ultimately, right, I think every answer that I say is it depends, right? It depends on each person's situation. However, I would say when I was thinking about financial independence, retire early, I wasn't confident that 4% or the 25 times rule would be enough, right? Like I wasn't, because there's a chance that, you know, things in the future aren't going to be the same as they were in the past. Inflation could be higher, right? Any sorts of things could happen. Whereas now that I'm taking a SLOFI approach, I'm like, oh, 4% actually sounds great for the future when I get to that place. And the reason why is that I have different income streams that are easily, like that it's a lot easier at least to be able to scale those up and down, right? When I was thinking about financial independence and quitting and never working again, getting to a place where, oh, I would need to be flexible and maybe need to generate $10,000 a year doing something, that seemed scary. Like I haven't worked in 10 years. How am I going to generate $10,000 a year? I have to go to like work at Starbucks or do some, you know, something like that. Whereas having different income streams, it's a lot easier to think, oh, I could scale this up and I could easily generate $10,000 a year if I needed to in a variety of different ways. And so I feel like that gives me a lot more confidence in the plan and a lot more, like it feels a lot more flexible. And it feels like depending on the year, I might be able to say like 5% or even more of withdrawal would be fine if it's a good year, knowing that I can a lot more easily adapt to downturns taking a SLOFI path.
Heidi, a moment ago we were talking about what enough looks like. Let's turn that around though. And we're talking about you specifically, because obviously it's different for each person. But what does too little look like? Because sometimes I worry with SLOFI, what if we're not making enough money? How do we know that maybe we have to be a little bit more aggressive in our plan?
Yeah, I think there's a couple pieces for me personally that I like to look at various forms of capital. Just so if I realize my social capital is being diminished because I'm so focused on getting money that I'm not spending time with the people I enjoy, that's something I need to take into consideration. Another form of capital I like to think about is my well-being capital. So am I actually healthy in this space? Is this causing me, you know, a lot of anxiety? Is my physical abilities being restricted? Am I not exercising? Am I not eating well? Am I not sleeping well? All of those factors actually are really important to a thriving life. And so I guess any of those factors are really a good self-reflection practice to go, am I actually thriving in this moment? Because if it's not, and if it's because of money, then I need to make some adjustments. It could be something else. But for me, having that little checkpoint, and again, social capital and well-being capital are both really important to me personally. It may not be as important to others, but those are two things that I will check myself occasionally and say, ooh, I'm spending a lot of time on my screen lately doing the work and my kids are questioning me. That's a checkpoint. Or, you know, I think there's other ways that when we go too far, that it's easy for us to go down the rabbit hole sometimes and not have a checkpoint. And for me, those are the two that I would say I've gone too far.
I would also say Like it's similarly to what Heidi was saying, checking in regularly with yourself to say, like, do I love my life? Right. And if the answer is no, then you can dig in and say, okay, let me think about all of the different areas of my life. Let me think about my work, think about my finances, think about my relationships, think about my well-being, think about my learning and curiosity and fun and play and adventure and like the things that I say that I value. And let me figure out which ones are not a 10 out of 10, right? Or which ones are lower on that scale so that I'm able to focus on those things and to say, okay, what would enable me to get to this place? And if the answer is more money, then that's an important thing. That's a really important point to pay attention to.
Heidi, I believe the SLOFI term was coined in 2017. This is well before COVID, the pandemic, and the pandemic recession. How do you think SLOFI has changed during these last few years, especially with all the stress and trauma? Has the movement changed or pivoted with current events?
Yeah, I did not necessarily find SLOFI until roughly 2020, actually. And it was probably before the pandemic, but it was really close. It's hard to tell which came first, SLOFI or the pandemic. I can't keep track anymore. But for us, it has definitely changed. So actually going back, I think it was even 2019 or 2020, I was creating kind of goals around what I wanted my life to look like. And 2020, I turned 40 in 2020. Actually, like the day the world shut down was my 40th birthday. Happy birthday to you. You get a pandemic. And I remember feeling like this was going to be the best year of my life. I was so excited for 2020 because I had really shifted this concept of chasing FI to slow things down and not necessarily be my quote for the year was every day is going to feel like vacation. And what vacation meant to me was family connection time. It meant having these fun adventures where we got out of daily life, where we were tested and we had to push our own boundaries. Well, ironically, the pandemic helped us experiment with all of those things. Things like homeschooling. I never really probably would have done that had I not been forced to. Our travel plans, you know, that were all exclusive, you know, extremely exciting plans for the year, obviously altered radically in the midst of the pandemic. So everything I thought my FI life, I wanted in my FI life, I actually got to test it in this little window under the worst circumstances possible. And I was like, well, if we can make this work, then this is potentially what we should lean into. So it helped me reframe that adventure is not a big bucket list item. It is these little things in our backyards. We took Wednesday afternoon field trips in our backyard or in a local area that we didn't know. It required us to explore things differently. It allowed us to get more creative, to meet neighbors on the road, you know, as we were walking past each other. So for us, I do think the pandemic handed us a silver lining and said, here's an opportunity to test everything you think you want, but you don't know how to do it under the traditional circumstances. And we were able then to say, oh gosh, it was the first time we ever rented an RV. And now we're potentially going to be part-time living in an RV, you know, so it definitely handed us an opportunity to say, why not this? Let's try this. Even though, you know, I probably wouldn't have signed up for that under those circumstances, but I think it was a great gift.
Jessica, I'd ask the same thing of you. You were there from the beginning. How do you see SLOFI has changed over the pandemic, and how do you see it changing in the future?
I think the biggest thing that's changed about it is that more people get it. And more people are interested in being intentional about designing their lives along the way to FI, right? The pandemic gave us, I think, while really hard, gave a lot of people a unique opportunity to step back a little bit from their work and to have a little bit more brain space to say, like, is this the life that I want? Right. And it exacerbated many of the challenges that so many people were facing that it, I think, pushed us to make different decisions. So for me, right, I had my sort of crisis moment back in 2018, right? When I needed to take that, you know, 6 months off of work and I got to a crisis point where I had to move in a different direction. I think the pandemic contributed to that for a lot of people and got people to that sort of mental crisis moment where they knew I need to make some changes in my life. And then for me specifically, I think similar to Heidi, it gave me an opportunity to experiment with some things and have a little, being someone who doesn't have kids, I had more time, right? As opposed to less time to do some things. And so I actually launched my coaching business in April of 2020. Like, and it was in the works long before the pandemic, right? And so I was able to continue to move forward with that. But then I had a little bit more time to be able to focus on building that and ended up quitting my part-time job quite a bit earlier than I was expecting, right? So about 9 months later, I quit to take the business, quote unquote, full-time. And a big part of that was, one, not having a commute and having sort of less time focused on work so that I had more brain space to focus on building my business. And then I think, two, the pandemic exacerbated all of the things that I hated about HR, like having to figure out all the policies and what it meant for employees and all of the things, right? There were days that I just remember like spending 2 hours just like reading through government documents and then like laying on my couch for an hour because I just couldn't see straight because I was so exhausted and being like, I don't want to do this anymore. And so it felt easier to like get to that point to say, okay, I'm not willing to put up with something that's just mediocre. I want to do something, you know, I want to move toward the life that I really want more quickly.
To Jess's point, I do think there was this external, There was kind of this external expectation that we all wanted to go back to normal. And I really felt like I wanted to give space and permission for people to not want to go back, to go. And part of the reason I actually wrote the book was to like, don't go back to normal, go beyond normal, go beyond what you thought was possible. Stretch out of your comfort zone and find your community. So I think the biggest part for COVID in my world was the lack of community. They say you're like the average of the five people you spend the most time with. I have three kids and a husband and a dog. And I'm telling you, that average was diminishing by the day. And I was like, I need community. I need to find people that I can connect with. And that was unlike anything I had ever done before in a different realm. So in some ways, I think if we listen to the external narratives and we believe them, it can be a tricky trap of like, well, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to think? And it gave me the space to say, I don't want to go back to normal. I don't want that to be what my life is anymore, even though I had a very rich life and I liked my life. It gave me permission, and I hope it gave a lot of other people permission to really question what life could be and what do you want your new normal to look like.
Jessica, I feel like difficult journeys always start with that first step. So if you're listening right now and you're like, slow-fi sounds great to me, what is that first step to take? How do we get started?
It's a great question. So it depends on where your starting point is. So if your starting point is you've been pursuing financial independence and have been focusing on your personal finances for a while, then the first step could be, where am I and what do I really want? Like, what can my current finances allow me to do, right? And I have a tool actually that I created mostly for myself, right? To get myself to a point to say, how can I use my finances to empower me to make decisions that it can improve my life, right? And so figuring out like how much FU money I have. So how much money do I have that I can use that's sort of liquid cash or investments that will allow me to get out of a bad situation or take advantage of an opportunity? What is that and how many months of expenses is that? The next one is, am I coastify? That gives me a lot of clarity about the kinds of work decisions that I can make. Or I'm coastify if I stop working, if I stop investing more, is there a certain age at which I will have that crossover point because of compound interest? Or there's another number for me that was really helpful, which was, if I stopped investing now, but just covered my cost to 65, what would the value of my portfolio be at that point? That was a key number to be like, oh, I don't need to oversave. Like, I don't need to oversave by that much. Like, that would be, you know, that seems like a waste of my life to sort of push to oversave, right? So I think the first step is to figure out where you are and what kinds of options that would afford you to take, and then start to think about, well, what do I really want? And it could be, maybe you need some time for burnout recovery, right? To be able to figure that out. But I think the key is knowing where you are and that you can take some steps toward building a life that you would truly love. For someone who has not been sort of focused on their personal finances up to this point, I would say, I guess the advice is not that much different in that I think the first step is to figure out where you are financially. Are you in debt? Are you in a debt repayment process? Are you building up your emergency fund, right? So figuring out where you are in that process. And I do think that people assume that they need to be far down the path in order to make changes that improve their life. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think as you're paying off debt and you're decreasing your expenses, right, that means that you don't need to generate as much income. And so if you need to work 4 days a week to recover from burnout for a period of time, that could be a possibility for you along the path to FI, or to say, I feel more confident because I'm getting myself to a better financial position, that I'm going to set boundaries. Or I, you know, and sort of make a decision about what is that next financial milestone that I want to get to, and what pace do I want to get there to be able to take advantage of the freedom that that offers.
Well, Heidi Dusek and Jessica Lynn, I wanted to thank you for coming on the show today. In the forever argument between YOLO, you only live once, and deferred gratification, I think that slow FI is the best answer, because the best answer is both. We need to learn how to both YOLO and deferred gratification. Slow FI is one of the most coherent ways to do that. I want to end this episode the way I end every episode, by asking you, what is up next in your life and where can we find you? Jessica, let's start with you. What is going on with you, and how can people get in touch with you if they'd like to?
So what's up next is, my husband and I are in the process of building a camper van that will be done over the next couple of weeks. So we are excited for that and to take some road trips. This summer, we're doing a 3-week Canada, Maritime Canada trip, and then going to start exploring doing some like living and working out of the van, you know, for short periods of time. So we're super excited about that. And where you can find me, my website is thepioneers.com. So pioneers, but with an F, right? So for financial independence. And I can be found on Twitter and Instagram at thepioneers. And then I do have a private Facebook group for people who are interested in slow FI called Slow FI Enthusiasts. And you can find that at thepioneers.com/FB for Facebook.
And Heidi, tell us all about your book coming out, Beyond Normal. When will it be out? Where can we find it? And how can we get in touch with you if we want to learn more?
Yeah, the book is Beyond Normal, as you said, a field guide to really help families adventure. So if you have kids or not, it's really a way to embrace adventure and explore the wilderness, much like Jess already referred to as living in a camper van. But you don't have to live in a camper van to have these experiences. It actually comes out May 17th, so it should be alive and well on Amazon, or you can pre-order it on my website at ordinarysherpa.com. In terms of our life, my husband resigned from his teaching job and is exploring his own version of what Slowify might look like. I am continuing to stay employed, but I can be found on the podcast Ordinary Sherpa, which is really designed to help families connect through simple and authentic adventure experiences. And there's really hard to keep up with us, quite honestly. So it's best to probably just watch our Instagram, listen to the podcast, because we're all over the place. We also will be in Alaska and Canada and Idaho for much of the summer. So
this has been the Earn and Invest podcast. On behalf of myself, Doc G, I'd like to thank Heidi Dusek and Jessica Lynn. That's a wrap. Awesome. As you guys know, I keep the audio going just for a few minutes as we chat. Thank you for coming on. I think Slowify is important. I do actually think it's one of the best answers we have right now to both building a financial framework as well as embracing what's going on in our life at the moment, not letting money get in the way, because, you know, I fervently believe money is a tool, not a goal. And we have to start seeing it as a tool again to having better lives. And I think we've lost sight of that, at least in the financial independence movement. I think in the world as a whole, sometimes you have the opposite issue, which is they burn through money sometimes way too fast. But
So. It's interesting, Jordan, because I work for a foundation and have worked in philanthropy for a number of years, I probably would have questioned FI or FIRE much sooner had I not seen it actually in real life. Like, I saw people's investments. Now I've been managing a portfolio for a foundation that started in 1996. And only, they spend at least 5% each year and it's thriving, you know? So yeah, I think there have been plenty of examples for me to see that. If I was to go back and look at my 20s, I probably would have still done things differently though. There are days I don't regret my 20s, but boy, I could have really utilized some compound interest in my 20s.
Jessica, how does it feel to have coined the term SloFi? I mean, it really rolls off the tongue of everyone who's interested in financial independence, at least. It's an idea that's really taken off.
How does it feel? I'm glad. I'm excited. I'm happy that it's something that's part of the vernacular now, and that people are seeing it as a viable option for them in their lives. I know actually it started when I started actually doing those SloFi interviews in 2019. And actually I didn't call it SloFi right away. I called it slowing down on your path to FI. Right. And then I was this is way too long. But it was that was around the time I was learning about semi-retirement and Coast-Fi, and, you know, and I was I want to do this, but I don't know anyone who is taking this approach, but I knew there would be people out there. And so that was why I started the interview series, was to find people who were actually using their financial freedom along the way to FI, using it and not jeopardizing their a comfortable traditional retirement and what that looked like for people. And it evolved, right? So several months later, it became SloFi. So it was actually 2019 that we coined the term. I'm excited to see how it's evolved. And it's actually interesting. I've been getting into more recently listening to or reading books and stuff of just the slow living movement movement. And there's so many parallels to it that, you know, it was I sort of knew about the slow movement and slow food and, you know, had done some research and, you know, thinking about that. But as I get further into it, it's like, oh, this absolutely aligns with so much of that, with the focus being on intentionality.
It's so funny that you mentioned that, Jess, because I would have never embraced slow life anything, right? I've never been slow. So I joke because, like, when I talk about adventure being like the uncomfortable new experience, slow life is the uncomfortable new experience for us. And it's so interesting that it fits, even though I'm not, like, I wouldn't typically have described myself that way. So it's really funny.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Tech moves fast, so keep pace with the Daily Crunch podcast from TechCrunch. With new episodes every day, this podcast will give you a quick overview on everything you need and should know about startups, new tech, regulations, and more. Listen to TechCrunch Daily Crunch now, wherever you get your podcasts. That's TechCrunch Daily Crunch, wherever you get your podcasts.